Merry Christmas. I'm Lee Hay, and welcome to the 15th annual Around Cincinnati 2-Hour Christmas Special. During the first hour this evening, you'll hear holiday music from Noah Weatherspoon and Jesse Bear, Ma Crow and Margie Dries, Elaine Deal and Friends, No Promises, and many others with local ties. Katie Lauer, Nat Commissar, and Robin and Joni Lacey also share some Christmas stories. Let's begin with a reading by Noah Hunt and his daughter Lila. "'Twas the Night Before Christmas."
This is Noah and Lila Hunt, reading "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" by Clement Clark Moore. "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long winter's nap.
When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was a matter. Away to the window, I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wandering eyes would appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer.
With a little old driver so
lively
and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, with coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away all.
As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, set up to the house, top the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and clothes were tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack.
His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself.
A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight,
"Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Thank you. Hello, my name is Jessie Bear, and this is Noah Weatherspoon, and we are going to do Blue Christmas. Happy holidays!
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations are red on a green Christmas tree. Won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when those blue snowflakes start falling, that's when those blue memories start calling. You'll be doing all right with your Christmas white. I'll have a blue, 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 blue Christmas.
Everybody out there in WVXU, I'm Ma Crow, and I have my very good friend Margie Dries here with me on fiddle, and we want to sing this song called Jolly O' St. Nicholas, and I want to dedicate it to my little buddies in Indiana, my little Quinn and Connor. They are my grandsons. I sang this song for Quinn a few years ago, and he kept making me sing it over and over and over until he learned it. Jolly O' St. Nicholas.
Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm gonna say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me and tell me if you can. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a dolly. Nellie wants a picture book, she thinks dolls are folly. As for me, my little brain isn't very bright. Whisper what you'll bring to me, what you think is right. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row, mine will be the shortest one, and you'll be sure to know. Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm gonna say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me if you can. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me if you can. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Katie Lauer. Merry Christmas to you. As my Christmas present, I want to share a story I've written. I just call it a Christmas story. Christmas magic started at our house in Detroit about the middle of December when we went to get the tree from a vacant lot across from the drugstore. The best, most luxurious Scotch pine tree cost only $5, but to the grown-ups, newly arrived from the family farm, buying any tree seemed like the most foolish of city notions. Back in Tennessee, you just went outside and cut your own tree. All of us went. For my sister and me and our cousins, there was ice skating and hot cocoa at an outdoor rink down the street. By the time we got home, with the tree tied loosely onto the top of the car, we were out of control, running and jumping and laughing loudly. Daddy was on the job, though. "Keep it down, kids," he said a little roughly. "Remember, old Santa Claus is watching." Mother didn't like noise, and I could see her eyebrows furrowing over her brown eyes. She looked like a frightened deer in the headlight. She was tall, raw-boned, as the old folks said, with loose brown hair that fell past her ears. She had pretty hands and fingernails with perfectly shaped half moons at the nail bed. She wore a cheap coat and white orthopedic shoes because she worked on her feet at a bakery all day and already had varicose veins. She was 26 years old. My little sister Jackie and I had picked out a milk glass candy dish for Mother because she loved candy. We found it at Kresge's dime store and put it on layaway, hoping we'd find enough dimes and quarters to pay for it by Christmas. "Now don't slip up and tell Mother," I admonished, and Jackie nodded her head, her huge blue eyes drilled into me. She wanted only to please me, but we fought just the same. Hard, hurtful fights. When Mother and Daddy thundered at us, we could turn on a dime and be each other's best friends again. It was us against them. We had come to Detroit from Tennessee 5 years before that Christmas, along with 250,000 other Southerners. We came for economic opportunities, for a different life from the one we had back home in Henry County. Our father and his brother had spent nearly a year in Germany at the tail end of World War II, and they came back wild, as the women folks said, disdainful of the old ways. Times were hard. The only job a man could get was sweeping out the general store. Women were lucky to get work sewing at the local shirt factory. My father and my uncle went to Murray State Teachers College on the GI Bill and studied to be accountants. When my grandfather died, they sold his farm, quit school, and moved to Detroit. They had heard from a cousin that the city was thriving, with plenty of work to be had in the automobile plants. Like other immigrants before us, we were mocked. Our Southern accents, our clothes, our old cars were grist for the mill. "Ask 'em what banana boat they came over on," my usually peaceful grandmother counseled when I came home crying from grade school. Like other immigrants, we closed in a tight circle around the family. Christmas that year was the perfect distraction from our daily woes. My mother began her yearly candy-making efforts early. She made fudge and dipped it in paraffin, topping each piece with a pecan. She made a divinity so sweet you could crack a tooth on it. My grandmother began combining dates and figs in the sausage grinder to make the nut-like filling for Lady Baltimore cake. All the women chopped fresh coconut for the frosting. My aunt made the pies, chocolate, pecan, pumpkin, lemon meringue, raisin, and coconut cream. How they did it all and worked day jobs and raised children, I don't know, but they were young and I suspect they were homesick. Weekends, we played music. We gathered in the basement of our house bought for $10,000 on the GI Bill, and began what would be a weekend ritual, singing and playing around the piano till the wee hours of the morning. Aunt Dot played the piano and sang Walking in a Winter Wonderland, her coppery curls bouncing, her cheeks red with exertion. At the end of a session, she would invariably talk about a piano player in Tennessee, Barbara Jackson, who had borrowed all her sheet music and never returned it. "Darn that Barbara Jackson," she'd fume. Daddy played the guitar, an OK Jumbo, which he bought at Monkey Ward's or Sears, I can't remember which. Uncle Fred played the fiddle, but not before he was oiled up on good Canadian whiskey. Aunt Olene and Uncle Clarence danced, twirling and doing the Lindy Hop all over the basement. Everybody sang. My sister leaned against the piano and added her clear soprano voice to the ensemble. She was only 6 or 7, but she sang harmony with the maturity of an adult. In fact, she had sung before she could talk. She was only 3 years old when she warbled Cruising Down the River, lyrics and all, and astonished everyone. Aunt Dot said she could have sung before the crowned heads of Europe. That Christmas, my sister and cousins and I sang in church, at other people's houses, any place there was a piano. Little Patty wasn't big enough to read, but she held the hymn book upside down and sang the songs from memory. Mother and Aunt Olene sewed our Christmas dresses for the midnight service. I know we prayed that Santa Claus would find us in spite of the whiskey, but how much did we really know about Santa Claus? Daddy rented a Santa Claus suit. When he walked in the room, he scared everybody nearly to death, especially little Patty, who screwed up her face and cried for half an hour. Despite a number of setbacks, my little sister fell in the Christmas tree and got a spanking. My aunt and uncle had a fight about his playing poker with some men she didn't approve of. We endured, and sure enough, Santa Claus found us. I got a typewriter that year and a doll carriage, and from my aunt in Mississippi, books, Nancy Drew books at that. On Christmas morning, Daddy had a headache, and every time we made a sound, he'd pinch the bridge of his nose and look distracted. Mother divided her time between him and my sister and me. After the long-distance telephone rates had gone down, she called her mother and father. While she talked, she cried quietly, the tears streaming down her pretty face. She seemed to have forgotten all about the milk glass candy dish. "Didn't you like what you got from Santa Claus?" I asked, worried about her. "Oh, yes, honey," she said, drying her eyes on a handkerchief someone had given her as a present. She took a piece of fudge out of the dish and bit into it and struggled to give us a smile. "Christmas isn't about the presents you get," she said, and her face resumed its regular contours. "Christmas is a spirit." I was only a child, but her words sounded important to me for reasons I didn't understand. What did she mean by saying Christmas is a spirit? Everybody knew Christmas was about Santa Claus and presents. I kept her words in my heart, though, and after all these years, I still remember what she said, and I continue to puzzle over what she meant. Whatever it means to you, may the spirit of Christmas be with you, and may it remain with you through the long, cold winter ahead. I'm Katie Lauer. Thank you.
Hi, this is Van Ackerman, the Vice President of Marketing and Communications with the Cincinnati Arts Association. Happy holidays from the Aronoff Center and Music Hall to you and yours.
This is Greg Dastelung. I was practicing gratitude and being grateful for my wife, who is the glue that holds our blended family together. And I made a list, and I looked at it, and the musician in me said, "This is a song." And 30 minutes later, it was. Merry Christmas.
It seems this year's gone by so fast, always on the go. The holiday's already here, dashing through the snow. I'd be so happy to hold these moments longer than a while, just to tell you
I'm Elaine Deal in the studio with my friends Greg Dastelung piano, Jan Deal bass, and Chris Goins guitar with warm wishes for a bright and merry Christmas. Tonight we've chosen a song that began its life as a poem written by a young man named Frank Pooler in 1944. Frank was a sad young 18-year-old who had just broken up with his girlfriend right before Christmas. But because they were apart, he never set the words to music, and the girlfriend never read the poem. 22 years later, that same Frank Pooler was teaching at Long Beach State in California, where both Karen and Richard Carpenter were members of his choir, going to school while trying to get a record deal for their band. When they told Mr. Pooler that they were tired of the same old Christmas songs everyone was singing and looking for something new, he dug out the old forgotten lyrics, shook off the dust, and asked Richard if he'd like to give it a go. 15 minutes later, Richard had composed Merry Christmas, Darling. While it became a number one hit for the Carpenters, the song didn't really touch me until I heard the great Mary Ellen Tanner sing it. With a message that could be for anybody, a husband or wife, son or daughter, mom or dad, brother or sister, or an absent friend. Anyone who you might be missing just a little more than usual at this time of year. Here's Merry Christmas, Darling by Frank Pooler and Richard Carpenter.
greeting cards have all been sent. The Christmas rush is through, but I still have one wish to make, a special one for you. Merry Christmas, darling. We're apart, that's true.
This is Roberta Schultz wishing you a wonderful holiday with my song, Ars Poetica. It's a song about writing poetry and noticing the beauty of the season.
We chant our conjugations, snow funnels round in swirls. Next to the wall of window panes, 10 boys, 11 girls. Wafer-sized and shiny, flakes make it hard to bow. In attitude of swim, swim, swum, we've taken up for now. Miss Gosney drops her grammar book to look up at the scene. Framed in 100 glittering panes, a painter's touch serene. Red barn against gray heavens, white drifts brushed on brick wall. Our tiny school in forefront, bearing witness to it all. Close your books now, children. Stop and look outside. It's time to capture miracles. We push our books aside. Our pencil scratching paper, coke sprays is in the air. Communal feast of noticing, our common book of prayer.
Hello, I'm Nat Commissar. I am the former owner of the Maisonette restaurant. I'm currently a realtor. And I'd like to tell a few stories about Christmas at Maisonette. If you never had the wonderful experience of going to Maisonette at Christmas, I am so sorry. It was a magical time of year in a very magical place. The place glittered, front to back, top to bottom, and everybody wanted to be there. Not just customers and friends and clients, but our family all wanted to be there. It was just a wonderful celebration of something which was very special in Cincinnati, Ohio. Maisonette was this place that, gosh, I have such a hard time describing to other people who really just think of it as a restaurant. If someone in New York might think of a wonderful restaurant like Le Bernardot or Danielle, and there's some of that in there, but Maisonette was something tribal, something inherent to the Cincinnati fabric that is really undescribable. Part of that came from the legacy of my father and uncle. And one of my best examples of how it manifested is my cousin Michael. Michael had this innate ability to pair wine with food. He had a great sense of hospitality. And in the dining room, he was unparalleled. There's this one story about Michael that, to me, kind of encapsulates what Maisonette was. And in some ways, it's not even about Maisonette. It was a busy, busy December evening, probably a Saturday night, a Friday or Saturday night. Everyone has made reservations far in advance, and a party of six arrives. And somehow, in a very brief amount of time, Michael discerns that we have made a mistake. They had a reservation for six. This was the night. And they're not on the books. They're on the books for the wrong day. And we don't have a table. There is nothing to be found anywhere. So he does the best he can. He calls down to the Netherlands and he sees if there's a table in Orchids, and lo and behold, there is. He books a table of six right there immediately, and he organizes cabs. He apologizes profusely. He explains the situation to the guests, and he sends them on the way to have dinner, their Christmas dinner, somewhere else. Of course, when they arrive, they are welcomed in. They are not happy about the situation, and there at the table is a bottle of champagne waiting for them, as there should have been. Now, the evening goes on, and it's a wonderful evening. The restaurant was a wonderful place. And halfway through the meal, when it should be time for the manager or the maitre d' to come by and check on the evening, it's Michael that shows up. Michael comes down the street. He goes down and makes sure those people are enjoying their evening. And then, to top it off, when the evening's over and the host asks for his bill, there is none. Michael picked it up. And that's the sort of thing that exemplifies what Maisonette was and made it so special, was that notion that you had to do whatever it was you needed to do to make it right. It's not the mistakes that matter, it's how you responded to them. And that's what he did. So for those folks, and for me, it's a wonderful Christmas memory of how Maisonette really, really was something above and beyond. There's other stories which are a lot more festive and fun. There's the one that comes to mind involves Richard Brown, who's currently over at Restaurant L with Jean Robert, my cousin Mark and Michael. This also was very close to Christmas. This was a bustling Christmas day. And I should preface this with some understanding. Christmas for one of the Commissar family that was working was not a day or a week. It was a month. Every year I worked there, I would lose 15 pounds, regardless of what weight I started the season, just because you're in a constant state of motion. You'd go from Maisonette, you'd run up the stairs to the party rooms, check on the guests. Then you go down two flights of stairs to La Normandie, check on those guests, see what's happening down there, come back to the Maisonette. Somebody calls, they want a bottle of wine. You run downstairs through La Normandie, back out into the wine cellar and come back up with the wine. It was just constant motion for a month, and you just buzz and lose weight. So because it was an extended lunch and dinner period, we normally had a 15-minute, half-hour break between 4:30 and 5:30, somewhere in there, to go get a sandwich, to walk around the block, to take a big gulp of fresh air or something. And on this particular December day, let's say it was the 22nd or 23rd, it was a weekday. It was not a weekend because lunch was rolling into dinner. The dining room had, for the most part, emptied out. The middle room had a table or two. The left-hand room had a table or two. And over on the right, in what we called the brick room, there were two tables remaining. One, back in the corner, table 75, which if you go to Boca, is still back in the corner. It's table 75. One held six ladies from Hyde Park. They were all decked out for the holidays. They had jingle bells on their sweaters. They had reindeer antlers on their heads. They were laughing. They were whining. They were just enjoying the day completely. Two tables away, table 73, there were two guys, business suits, respectable gentlemen, and this lovely, tall, willowy redhead. And she was wearing a backless red dress. So at this point, when Mark and Mike, who were on that day, left to go get their breath of fresh air, to go eat their sandwich. When they left, neither of them was witness to the redhead getting up from the table, going to the ladies' room, reversing her backless dress, and then coming back downstairs. So what I've heard in the retelling of this over the years is that the six ladies in the corner were in hysterics. I mean, they were elbowing each other. They were laughing their heads off. And I know that they were going back and forth to the bathroom. And that's really all we knew until at 5:15, I know that both tables stood bolt upright out the door. That's all anybody knew. That was the end of it, or so everyone thought. At 6 o'clock, Mark Commissar got the call from this woman who was so irate, so upset. This could happen, Maisonette, of all places. To this day, I don't believe Mark knows who he spoke to or what her telephone number was. But he said to her on the phone, "Ma'am, you're going to have to help me to help you. I really don't know what it is you're referring to." And she said, "Well, those men and that woman and what they were doing, how could it happen in Maisonette?" And Mark is saying, and he's down in La Normandie on the phone, answering the phone. He's saying, "Ma'am, help me. I don't know what you're talking about." And she finally came out with it. And she said, "Well, they were licking whipped cream off her breasts." And Michael tells me that Mark held the phone away from his ear for a second. And then he said, "I'll call you back." And he hung it up. Never knew her name, never knew her phone number. He relates to Michael what he's just heard on the phone. And they bolt upstairs. And when they get there, there's Richard Brown. Richard Brown, who is maitre d' of Maisonette, who is proper and well-groomed. And they say, "Richard, what's going on? Did this happen? Were these men really, really licking whipped cream off her breasts?" And Richard says, "Absolutely not. It was white chocolate mousse." And that was one particular Christmas at Maisonette. I'm Nat Commissar. Merry Christmas all.
Happy holidays, everyone, from No Promises Vocal Band. We'd like to share a track with you. This is "Sleigh Ride," as performed by Andy Williams. Hope you enjoy it.
Jingling, ching, jingling, jingling, ching, jingling, rum, jingling, ching, jingling, jingling, ching, jingling.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling, too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy up, let's go. Let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow.
Wonderland, let's go.
Giddy up, it's grand.
It's grand.
Just holding your hand.
Ba-da-da-da. We're riding along with a song of a wintry wonderland.
Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy cozy are we. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take the road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
There's a birthday party at the home of Farmer Gray.
It'll be the perfect ending of a perfect day. We'll be singing the songs we love to sing without a single stop. At the fireplace while we watch the chestnuts pop.
There's a happy feeling nothing in the world can buy. When they pass around the coffee and the pumpkin pie,
it'll nearly be like a picture print by Courier and I.
These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring to tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Let's take the road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Hop, giddy up, let's go.
Happy holidays from the Cincinnati Boy Choir. My name is Jason Alexander Holmes, and I'm the artistic director. Here are the Cincinnati Boy Choir ambassadors singing Ábreme la Puerta, a carol from Puerto Rico.
Merry Christmas. My name's Michael Shertok. I'm on the faculty of CCM. I'm the conductor of the Blue Ash Montgomery Symphony. I play keyboard with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. And especially around Christmas time, you'll find me playing the organ at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church. This arrangement you're about to hear of It Came Upon a Midnight Clear was actually inspired by listening to the singing of Maureen McGovern. She has a fantastic and beautiful string-like quality to her voice, and I tried to capture some of that beauty and color in this arrangement.
Well, this is Robin Lacey.
And this is Joni Lacey.
And this is Robin Lacey and Zydeco, and our Christmas story starts in New Orleans. The whole band, actually, idea started in New Orleans on a Christmas vacation.
30 years ago. We went to New Orleans a couple days right before Christmas. I had been once. He had never been. Place is beautifully decorated. Charming. It's not really packed with people. Everybody was so friendly and nice. What blew us away, though, was finding ourselves a part of a candlelight carol singing out in Jackson Square. They gave everybody candles, and we stood in front of the beautiful church and sang Christmas carols. And then you remember
they had a whole choir, and then Aaron Neville came out and sang Christmas carols, and it was really kind of breathtaking because
it was breathtaking because we love Aaron Neville. And then of course we were down by the river. He put on another concert of Christmas music, and it was just enchanting. We fell in love with Zydeco music. We fell in love with the city of New Orleans. So these days, in our perfect world, we get to go back at Christmas time to New Orleans, and I love doing that. They have a tradition in the French Quarter. It's steeped in history because of all the French and Spanish and all the European influences that happened in the French Quarter. At one time, they had a very special thing that happened called the Revelon. And on Christmas Eve, everybody had to fast. Catholic families fasted. Nobody ate. They go to midnight mass, and after the mass, they put on this big feast. So everybody is eating till like 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, And it means awaken. Revelon, the word is French, and it means awaken. I'm probably butchering it. But waken the holiday spirit. So that'd be this fabulous thing that they would do on Christmas Eve into Christmas morning. And then as time went on, that kind of went by the wayside, that old Creole tradition. And then in the 90s, the really cool restaurants in the quarter picked that back up. Mm-hmm. And they kind of course, a revised version, you don't have to fix
you don't have
food
to fast
at midnight until 2 o'clock. I don't know. That'd be kind of cool. But now what they do is 5 courses on the menu, and they make a special drink that goes with it. And they just serve this through the holiday season that starts out on Christmas Eve. And they call that Revelon. And Robin and I have gotten to go several times.
Everybody makes a little bit of a different menu, but it's a set menu. You don't pick and choose. You just pick. Yeah. Either beef or chicken or whatever style it is.
And we've done the Court of Two Sisters. Mm. The Gumbo Shop even has a Revelon. Mm-hmm. And the Pelican Club was a fabulous dinner. But in our perfect world, we'd like to be in New Orleans on Christmas Eve and get a Revelon dinner.
And that whole trip started an experiment to go and find out about the music that we were looking to make a change, which started the band 30
years
ago.
Which changed our whole lives.
At Christmas time.
And so Christmas is very special for us in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. It's been really great. And I remember we drove down there. And I remember being so tired, and I just couldn't wait to get into the quarter, to get into our room, and thought I'd just hit the sack, And I was up there for like 15 minutes, and I was like, oh, I got to go. I got to get back out there. Everything was lit up and sparkly, and I don't think we slept all night that night.
I don't think we did either.
Christmas in New Orleans has always really been special for us.
So we're glad we got to share it. And this is Joni Lacey.
And this is Robin Lacey. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ben Levin. I'm a local blues piano player and singer from here in Cincinnati. I just released a new Christmas song. It's a bluesy Christmas tune called Forgotten Mrs. Claus. And I want to wish you all a happy holidays.
My woman shook the bed about 12:30. Told me to get up. I told her it's way too soon. I was out all night putting gifts under trees. She said, now Santa, did you forget about me? I said, oh man, don't have a second to pause. I gave the whole world presents and forgot Mrs. Claus. Jumped out of bed, looked around the room, couldn't find a thing but an old dusty broom. I gotta find something, even if I stole. I need a gift to keep a happy North Pole. I said, oh man, don't have a second to pause. Gave the whole world presents and forgot Mrs. Claus. Thank you. knew by now I was in deep. Gotta find something, and it better be cheap. She want a diamond ring, not an elf on a shelf. I got nothing, I'ma spend Christmas by myself. Oh man, don't have a second to pause. I gave the whole world presents and forgot Mrs. Claus.
You're listening to the 15th Annual Around Cincinnati Christmas Special on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford. Coming up in the next hour, songs from Bootsy Collins, Keith Little, the Bill Cunliffe Trio, and Afro Sheen. You'll also hear a reading of A Clifton Christmas by Jenny Burton, plus many other treats on this Christmas special.